Good to see everybody. I'm 31 weeks pregnant, you might have noticed. Yeah, I know, there's some people do think about. I noticed our baby moves a lot when there's music, so I think this child is really going to like music. When I was preparing for this morning, I actually wrote out another sermon and felt really good about it, really prepared. And then I was chatting with Bruce, and I felt God wanted me to preach a sermon I've actually preached before, which I never do again. But I felt God say that this was a word for today. And in hearing the lament, there's been quite a bit of lament this morning, hey? I can now see why the sermon has changed. So for those who are at PVC, I'm sorry, it might sound a little bit familiar, but it has changed a little bit. But bear with me. We're going to be reading about David and Goliath, so you might want to get your Bibles ready, which is in 1 Samuel 17, verse 8. But first of all, I'm just going to share some stories. I don't know if anybody's been watching the Rugby World Cup. Did anybody watch that? Yeah, a couple of you. Then there's the Cricket World Cup. Sports in our household is a big thing. And so it's become a bigger thing for me. And something that I've noticed, I don't know if you noticed this, when sports people are interviewed, they always talk about the training they've received, hey? Like they say, oh, our coach really did well in preparing us. We looked at the other team and our game plan worked. And there's a lot of preparation that goes into a sports game. I don't know if anybody played sport, and you know that training takes a long time. Our training matters. And I remember reading about a surgeon in Edinburgh Hospital. A child tragically died. And one of his colleagues came out to the newspaper, and I just find what he says absolutely fascinating. And I think it teaches us a lot about training as well. So I'll just read the excerpt. If anybody had handed me ether instead of chloroform, I would have known from the weight that it was the wrong thing. You see, I know the man well. We were students together. And he could have become one of the finest surgeons in Europe, if only he had given his mind to it. But he didn't. He was more interested in golf. So he just used to do enough work to pass his examinations and no more. And that is how he lived his life. Just enough to get through, but no more. So he's never picked up those seemingly peripheral bits of knowledge that can one day be crucial. The other day in the theatre, a bit of peripheral knowledge was crucial and he didn't have it. But it wasn't the other day he failed. It was 39 years ago when he gave himself half-heartedly to medicine. It's quite striking, isn't that? His training really mattered and he didn't take it seriously. So I just want you to hold those two stories in your mind as we now dive into the story that I'm sure you know really well. Israel is facing the Philistines, and there's this character called Goliath who keeps coming out and taunting them. I think it's always important to remember Goliath wasn't a giant. He was a tall man, but Saul was also a tall man. And so Israel, more than anybody, should have known that tallness doesn't equal greatness. But they are really stuck on appearances. So let's read verse 8. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. What's fascinating is Saul doesn't correct Goliath and say, actually, this is the army of the Lord's. He's not a spiritual leader. He didn't teach them habits of trusting God. And so when they came to a battle and saw something scary, instead of trusting God, they're really afraid. And he offers a different type of incentive to try and get them brave. It says, the king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. This is verse 25. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel. So instead of reminding them to trust God, that they're God's army, Saul says to them, I'll give you sex and I'll give you money. That's the incentive he puts before them. And Israel didn't become paralyzed just at this battlefield. This has been a long process of them becoming unfaithful to God, of them wanting to look like the other nations. That's why they asked for Saul, because they wanted somebody to protect them. They had not realized that they were being so influenced by wanting to become like the other nations that they had stopped being faithful to God. Goliath looked bigger because of their inactivity in their faith. Goliath only brought out what is already embedded into Israel, which was actually not a trust in God. They do not have the habits of trusting God, and so when a crisis happens, by their own strength, they face Goliath. And actually they realize they're weaker than him, and so feel afraid. They're really bogged down by their fear. I play squash, well not right now because it's quite tricky, but we talk a lot in squash about being flat-footed or light on your feet. So if you're receiving the ball and you're flat-footed, it's going to be hard to get there. It's quite hard to move when you're flat-footed. But if you're rolling on your feet and you're moving your legs around, you're ready to go, and it's quite hard to get past you. Israel, the image I have, were quite flat-footed. They weren't ready to go. But then David now comes onto the battlefield, and he has this very different response to Goliath than Israel had. He says in verse, if you want to keep following with me, 26, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Can you hear the difference between him and Saul? And so David, this little guy, volunteers to fight against Goliath, as you know. And he's brought before Saul. And there's some things to notice in what David says. So if you want to turn to verse 33, I want you to try and pick out what's the training David's received. What's David's habits that have already been formed? Why is this enabling him to feel so confident that he can fight Goliath? So verse 33. Saul replied, you're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. So what did you notice was his training? When he came across a hard time, he trusted God would be with him. And he faced hard things, and he knew that God would follow through. And he says, this is why I'm qualified to do this. It's not my strength. It's my trust in the Lord. He's not scared, because he's been trained for this moment, actually. He's ready to go. Being the people of God is about letting Christ train us to be faithful followers of him. This is through reading his word, spiritual disciplines, gathering like this, reminding each other of how active God is. It's lamenting together and talking about how God meets us in our pain. It's about sharing our faith with people who don't know Christ yet. In our ordinary life, we're actually being trained for moments where we need to be faithfully following Christ in ways we might never have anticipated. This takes intentional effort. And the point of this intentionality is for Christ's Spirit to form us, to have skills and habits that mean when we face a crisis we kind of already know what to do because we've already been practicing trust in God. Habits enable us to handle these crises without realizing that we're actually already doing that. Because we light on our feet, and we're ready to move, and we're ready to trust God. This, I think, is a spirit-given imagination that is inventive, and it's actually quite revolutionary. David sees the situation as a symbol of things beyond themselves. He doesn't see a strong man in Goliath. He actually sees somebody who's not being faithful to God. He sees the situation very differently. The story behind the story. This spirit-given imagination is the ability to see what is, but also what can be. It's seeing it through God's eyes, not through our own fears. David names the presence of God, and in doing so, he tells Israel they live by a different story, a different narrative, and he calls them back to it. In verse 38, we see that then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. I cannot go in these, he said to Saul, because I am not used to them. So he took them off. It's interesting, Israel still kind of wasn't trusting God. They wanted David to look like the other nations, because that's maybe how he'll beat Goliath. They're still trying to fight Goliath in their own strength. But David picks up on this and says, I cannot go in these. I am not used to them. We all experience this in our own lives, where people try to cloak us with heavy things that are just not who we are. You know how that feels. It's maybe a perception of who somebody thinks you should be. That's maybe more what the world thinks that you should be. But we've got to be really careful not being cloaked in things that bog us down and don't actually let us be light on our feet. He was light on his feet because David gave weight to God, and he didn't give weight to Goliath. Often when this passage is preached on, it's about facing our giants. Big giants who overpower us, and we've got a more powerful God. And that is a valid take from this. But what I find fascinating is David does not mention how tall Goliath is, nor how mighty he is. Actually, David only sees him as unfaithful to God. He sees him in a really different way. Did you notice that? Remember, he had a different perspective on the situation. What paralyzed Israel ignites David's passion for God. In the 2,000 years of church history, the church has kind of gone through cycles of paralyzation and then being light on their feet. And we're not immune to these kind of cycles that happen. Around 300 and 400 AD, the church was in quite a bit of crisis. Christianity had been a persecuted minority, but now it was becoming the Roman religion. And in becoming the Roman religion, it was being co-opted by the Roman Empire. So one of the examples was Christians believed in peace, and that we were not to murder or kill or enter battles. But what Constantine did is he would baptize soldiers and get them to hold up their arm with their sword so that they would be baptized but their sword could still be used. And so a lot of Christians were becoming quite coerced in this new culture that actually wasn't necessarily what Christ had taught. But they were afraid because the Roman Empire was really strong. And so a lot just started to go with the flow of what was happening. However, there were brothers and sisters who saw the situation differently. They actually saw Rome as a weak and quite unfaithful empire to the living, strong God. They saw Christians were putting on this heavy armor of how Roman beliefs were morphing Christianity. And the Spirit gave them an imagination to go into the desert. They became quite a voice in the wilderness. And lots of church historians say because of what they did, a revolution came to the church and a renewal that brought them back to Christ, which I'm very thankful for. And then if we look at another example in Europe, so urbanization is taking place. This is back in the 1200s. The church has been very comfortable in the rural areas. They got a lot of power. They got very used to the amount of money that they got. And now all of a sudden people are moving into the city and they're losing parishioners. And it feels like there's this max exit to Christianity as people go to the city. And so Christians start feeling really nervous about this. And it starts to paralyze the church. And the church's response was to make more money. So they wanted to try lure people back. And so money making became a very big focus. So what does the Spirit do in this situation? He gives a man named Francis another way of seeing it. Instead of seeing these cities as big monsters, he sees them as a place of opportunity, that maybe the church needs to engage in a new way. And actually, maybe this enables them to reach people they hadn't reached before. He was light on his feet. And the Franciscan movement was birthed, and their main vow was to poverty, which was very countercultural. And this was because the church had become defined and flat-footed through focusing on wealth that parishioners could give them. God used them to create this amazing renewal in the church, and many people who had never heard the gospel before did. We can do this as well. We can be a community of renewal, but it requires that we see the situations differently to maybe how the world does. With David and with these examples, they were ready because they were very light on their feet. They were ready to follow where God led them. Here's what we often miss in the story of David, is the Spirit-given imagination to see what is happening, but also how it can be different. We often can get fixed on kind of things that seem like giants, and we miss the Spirit's work, and also that Christ has the victory through the cross, that he has risen again, and he's active in this world, calling us to join in on what he's done. He did what Israel could not do. He faithfully followed God and shows us how to do so as well. We can sometimes limit our understanding of the Spirit and how he renews his church. In the book of John, it says, "The wind blows wherever it pleases. You hear its sound, but you cannot tell where it comes from or where it is going." So it is with everybody born of the Spirit. David and people throughout church history have had their sails wide open so that they can be caught up in the wind of the Spirit. Now in New Zealand, something I hear often is lament that we used to be a Christian nation, and the rejection of Christianity has felt like something that's paralyzed people, made people quite nervous to talk about their faith in public spaces, or to even talk about others inviting them into faith. There can be this kind of increased desire now to blend in and just make faith very personal. It's not something I say in the public, it's only something I say at home, which I know is not what you guys like to do. You like to say it in the public. But I think this is an opportunity for the church to rethink how we operate in the public space with our faith. We need a Spirit-given imagination to share a gospel in a place that has really changed. It's a different environment now. So who do you relate to most in your life? Do you feel like right now you're a little bit like Saul, seeing a big giant that just feels scary? Or do you feel like you're like David, who's been trained to face what's in front of you right now? What are things that can paralyze you, that can make you feel so afraid? Why not bring them before God? Let's be light on our feet, ready to change, and to have the Spirit-given imaginations. I think Jesus Christ enables us to see how things truly are and how they can be. And I think he actually gives us the courage to follow him and to do so. So I'm going to pray for you as I finish this. Jesus, you are incredible and mighty. You are before your Father interceding. All the prayers that have been prayed, by your Spirit you've given words that we didn't have, and your Father has heard us. Lord, I pray for those things that can feel so paralyzing, that we bring them before you, and that you give us a new sight to see it in. I thank you so much for the testimony of Fug, who has encouraged us to keep coming towards you and to ask you to help us see situations in a different way. Thank you so much for his faith. Even though he felt he was losing it, Christ, you never lost faith in him. And so I thank you for your continued presence with him. And Lord, as we go, may you give us courage to be light on our feet and to go to the places and the people that you call us. In your mighty name, amen.